scripture passage that Dr. Cannon read for us so eloquently this morning from John 9, 1 through 7, tells the story of Jesus opening the eyes of the blind. It is not primarily a story about Jesus opening the eyes of the man born blind. Someone in this passage, though, must learn to see. Have you ever thought that you were teaching someone else, helping someone else to gain a new perspective and suddenly realized it was the other person who was teaching you, revealing something about your thinking, about your emotions, about your experience or perspective, illuminating for you deep personal insight where until that moment you were blind? Such self-reflection necessitates empathy, the ability to see from a new perspective, the ability to see through the eyes of another. One day when my daughter Finley, who is now 11, when Finley was 5 years old, she and I were walking through the foyer of our church after a long day of church services, and I was tired, and five-year-old Finley was chatty. That's hard to believe. Finley proceeded to eloquently describe for me every detail of her kindergarten Sunday school class. And with deep and sincere frustration, she told me of how the boys in her class refused to play house with her. All they wanted to do was play tag. And I thought, all things in perspective, Finley. I thought, boys won't always want to play house, and Finley will have a lot of life left to be frustrated with the boys in her life. And so I responded with a quick quip, reminding her that life can be hard, and I said, well, Finley, life's tough. And in all my adult superiority and maturity, I imagined that I was teaching my daughter to toughen up, to put things in perspective, to shake off what I viewed as the small stuff. But in my adult superiority, displayed with a quick quip, I failed to see. I failed to see through Finley's eyes. And five-year-old Finley, she stopped in her tracks so abruptly that I was forced to turn around, and five-year-old Finley pulled herself up to all of her kindergarten height and made direct eye contact with her father and said, with all of the insight she inherited from her mother, who is a licensed professional counselor, Finley said, Daddy, I don't like when you talk to me like that. It makes me feel like you're not really listening to me. Oh, I thought I was teaching Finley, but it was I who needed to learn. It was I who needed to look again. I needed to look again and see Finley in a new light, to see Finley as one who needed her father to listen in order to understand, rather than offering a dismissive quip. I needed to look again. In John 9, around the time of the Feast of Tabernacles, Jesus and his disciples were walking along outside of the temple. And as they walked, Jesus saw a man born blind. Jesus truly saw this man, and the disciples who were with Jesus asked a question about the man. The disciples asked a question that they assumed displayed their spiritual maturity. They asked a common first century theological query concerning those who are born with a physical challenge. They assumed that someone was to blame for the man's blindness from birth. Either this man or his parents must have sinned for this man to receive the consequence of blindness from birth. And church, I don't want you to miss this. The disciples asked a theological query about the man, and our text makes clear they did not see the man. Jesus saw him. The disciples asked a question which they knew had only one of two answers. Either the man or the man's parents were at fault. They just as easily could have asked Jesus, "Who's to blame? At whom should we point the finger?" Their question was abstract. It held this man born blind at arm's length. It kept this man born blind tucked neatly behind a wall of their own predetermined answers, behind a story they had already told concerning the man. The disciples saw the man through their eyes of spiritual superiority, a spiritual superiority that they masked with religious piety, with a theological question. But Jesus saw the man, and Jesus saw his disciples. And Jesus knew their question was a facade of piety. And so instead of answering the disciples, Jesus instructed them to look again. Jesus replied to their theological query by dismissing both of their predetermined answers. Neither this man nor his parents sinned. Jesus does not say here that sin is without consequence. Neither does he say that this man born blind is without sin. Instead, Jesus instructs his disciples to look again at the man born blind, to look again through new eyes. In John 9, verses 3 and 4, Jesus told the disciples that in order that all the works of God might be displayed in him, in the man born blind, we must do the works of him who sent me. We. Jesus looked at the disciples and said, "We have work to do. We have a mission to fulfill. We are called to live into the world as participants with God the Father in his work of redemption, in his work of rescue." It's as if Jesus asked the disciples, "Do you want to be a part of God's mission in the world? If you want to be a part of God's mission in the world, then you need to join me and look again at this man. Look again and see that which is possible in light of God's grace." The disciples needed to look again and see this man in light of Jesus, who is the light of the world. And then Jesus proceeded to spit on the ground and to rub mud in the man's eyes and sent him to the pool of Siloam, where the man washed and went home seeing. We look at others in our congregation or in our neighborhoods, at our places of employment or in our schools. What do we see? Do we see those whom we deem ashamed? Do we see those who are to be blamed? Do we see the cast out, the less than, those who are held at arm's length? Do we see those who are beyond redemption? Or do we see the possible? Do we see what can be in a new life? In the light of grace, in the light of God's redemption, in the light of Jesus, who is the light of the world. Perhaps we too need to look again. To look again in a new light requires a transformation of our imaginations. To look again at those around us and see the same people and yet to see them anew. I dare say when we look again at others in such a new light, not only do we see that which is possible in them by grace, we ourselves experience the transformation which is possible by God's grace in our own lives. Will we look again? As we keep reading in our story in John chapter 9, the man's neighbors in John 9 are frankly not sure what to do when they encounter this man whom they know has been blind his entire life, and yet now he sees. If you look at verses 8 and 9, John's gospel reads that the man's neighbors and those who had formerly seen him begging asked, "Is this the same man who used to sit and beg?" Some claimed he was. And others said, "No, he only looks like him." But he himself insisted, "I am the man." Some of the man's neighbors looked at him and claim that he is the same. Others look at him and claim, "No, that's not possible. That's not the same man." But did you catch his answer to both claims? Some said he's the same. Others said he is not the same. And he himself insisted, "I am that man. I am that same man. And now everything has changed." Later in verse 25, the blind man will say, "I was blind, but now I see." Will we look again? My freshman year in college, I had a good friend named Donnie. He lived three doors down from me in the freshman dorm at East Texas Baptist University, and we played on all of our intramural sports together. Donnie was engaging, and he was fun, and he was funny. And Donnie struggled with some things like attending class regularly. In addition, his freshman year, Donnie had a falling out with his family. His family was deeply broken. And as the year went on, Donnie began to cope with the stress of college and the spiraling of his family in a myriad of unhealthy ways. And eventually, Donnie ended up failing out of school. And I remember seeing him as he was in his final days before he knew he had to leave. And Donnie had a haunted look in his eyes. He said he felt ashamed and broken. And I'm sad to say that I lost touch with Donnie after he left school. But 12 years later, I ran into Donnie at a church youth camp. Donnie was the pastor of a small church in East Texas, and he was there volunteering with the youth from his church. And I noticed his eyes. When before they were haunted, they now were alight with hope. And I asked Donnie, "What happened to you?" And he told me that a few years after leaving school, he had a complete falling out with his family, and he hit rock bottom. Penniless and broken from years of trying to fill the void in his heart in ways that simply kept him empty and despairing, on the verge of complete despair, he went to a little church in his hometown, and he sat in the back corner pew by himself. Donnie told me, "I had nothing to give." Donnie said, "I saw myself as a failure and ashamed. I knew it. But instead of glancing at me and looking away, or looking at me as if I were broken beyond repair, this little church looked at me with grace. They didn't call me names or tell me to leave. They let me be one of their own. someone whose life could be made new by grace. And Donnie said, it took a long time. I needed constant help. But eventually, I became part of that family. And then he told me this. Donnie said, I started to see myself like my church did. I started to see myself as someone who could receive grace. Donnie was the same man that I knew, but he was not the same man. He needed a church that would look at him again and see him in a new light. Friends, when we look at others in our congregation, in our neighborhoods, at our places of employment, in our schools, what do we see? Those who are to be blamed, kept at arm's length beyond redemption? Or will we look again to see the possible? Do we see what can be in a new light, in light of God's grace, in light of Jesus, who is the light of the world? To look again and see others in light of the possibility of God's grace poured out in Jesus means that we must be willing to consider, at times, we might be wrong about our predetermined ideas of others. Psychologists call this cognitive dissonance, the ability to hold conflicting attitudes, beliefs, or behaviors in our minds, producing a discomfort that leads to an alteration of one of these ideas, beliefs, or behaviors. Admitting that we might be wrong in our predetermined answers about others opens us to the possibility of seeing others in a new light. If you were to continue reading John 9, you would see that the Pharisees come onto the stage with the man born blind. And the Pharisees in our story of the man born blind have real trouble with cognitive dissonance. They simply cannot reconcile that a man born blind could be healed by Jesus on the Sabbath. The Pharisees cannot imagine a world where a man born blind, whom they knew was steeped in sin from birth, could be made new. And after hurling insults at the man born blind and justifying their spiritual status and confirming their predetermined ideas about the man, the Pharisees shout at the man in John 9, verse 34, when they say, "You were steeped in sin at birth. How dare you lecture us?" And they threw him out of their presence. The Pharisees were unable to consider that they might be wrong about the man born blind. When they looked at the man, the Pharisees saw only someone steeped in sin from birth, someone unworthy of God's redemption, someone beyond the grasp of grace, beyond the pale of the Spirit's power to make new. The irony here, of course, is that the Pharisees' response reveals their own spiritual blindness. And the Pharisees' refusal to look again, in their refusal to see the man born blind in light of God's grace, they who were born with eyes to see miss God's grace in their midst. Church, this is a story about Jesus opening the eyes of the blind. It is not primarily a story about Jesus opening the eyes of the man born blind. At the beginning of our story, the disciples asked a question. Do you recall? They asked, "Who sinned?" They asked their question, and then we do not hear from the disciples again in John chapter 9. How did they respond? Did the disciples look again at the man born blind and see him with new eyes? in light of Christ's miracle? Did the disciples grasp that joining God's mission means we look again and see others with grace-transformed imaginations? Or did they refuse to see? John does not tell us. Perhaps John does not tell us because the response is up to us. So go ahead. Look around. Look at your church family. Do you see familiar faces? You see familiar stories. Go ahead and look around. I know, we always have trouble with this. It feels strange. Look around, choir too. Do you see unfamiliar faces? Stories with which you are unfamiliar. Now look again. What do you see?